Good afternoon and welcome to Central Coast Voices, a program sponsored by Action for Healthy Communities in collaboration with KCBX and made possible through underwriting by Joan Gellert Sargent. I'm your host, Chris Kington Barker. Using gender-specific data from existing research, a new report released by the Women's Legacy Fund, an endowed field of interest fund of the Community Foundation for San Luis Obispo, shone a light on significant issues affecting women and girls in the community. My guest today will talk about how the research was conducted, summing of the compelling results identified, and what the Women's Legacy Fund sees as necessary next steps for our community in addressing some of the concerns of girls and women in the community. I'm joined today by Suzanne Parker, Government Relations Manager at Pacific Gas and Electric Company and committee member for the Women's Legacy Fund, Robin Letters, owner of Opinion Studies, a San Luis Obispo-based research company, and one of the three authors of this report. Our show today is live, and we invite you to join our conversation with your comments or questions by calling us at 781-3875. Again, that's 781-3875, and welcome to both of you today.
Thank you.
Thanks for having us.
And Suzanne, let me go ahead and start with asking you what the Women's Legacy Fund is, a little bit about the history and how long it's been here, and what the purpose is.
Well, thanks. So the Women's Legacy Fund is a fund of the Community Foundation of San Luis Obispo County, and it was established in 2002. Our mission is to be a catalyst for philanthropy that improves the lives of women and girls in San Luis Obispo County.
Okay, and by philanthropy, you mean in terms of?
Grant making.
Okay.
And support to nonprofit organizations. So, okay. But specifically focused on girls and women.
Okay, and this particular project, how did that come about, Robin?
Well, and thank you, Chris, for having us here today. It's a delight to talk about this. The current effort started about a year ago when the committee behind the Women's Legacy Fund got together and in one of their retreats decided that what they needed to do was to provide more research into what the needs are of women and girls here in San Luis Obispo. And so our current effort, 2015, follows a similar effort in 2010, but we took a different approach. This year, the 2010 effort was really based on collecting data about women and girls. The current effort is more on, what would I say, mining existing data out mm-hmm. there, not collecting our own data, but using the wealth of data that was already available to us.
So tell me a little bit about how you did this particular report, how you put this together, Robin.
Well, we started with the noble interest of really collecting raw data, brand new data, but we suddenly realized that the price tag that goes with something like that is quite high mm-hmm. and probably beyond our reach to do something really both reasonable and reliable. So then we began the task of looking at all the secondary sources that already exist about women and girls in the county of San Luis as well as the state of California, and realized that at our fingertips was a tremendous amount of information.
When you're talking about secondary sources, you're talking about data or research that's already been done by another entity, by another agency, or...
Exactly.
Okay.
So when we talk about secondary data, we're talking about data that already exists out mm-hmm. there. Mm-hmm. When we talk about primary data, we're talking about data that we would go out and collect ourselves.
And, like, do a survey or something like that?
Do a telephone survey, do a mail survey, do an intercept survey, or any time that we would be collecting the data ourselves. But we found, and this was one of the things that was quite amazing to us, is how much data really already exists. So we came to the conclusion, why reinvent the wheel right now? And let's see what we have here. So in the end result, we ended up with something like 20 different sources that are referred to in our report. But in the process of doing that, we probably looked at twice as many sources and either felt it wasn't quite relevant, or we couldn't get the data on women alone, and that was one of the big issues, was finding data on just women or just girls and not on women and men combined or girls and boys combined. So that was quite a task.
So can you give me some examples of where this secondary data came from?
Well, the U.S. Census data was a huge source for us.
Okay.
From everything from demographics to income, household income, many other kinds of sources. But some of the other big sources was the vital signs report that was done in 2013 here in San Luis Obispo.
By the Community Foundation, the Action.
Yes, exactly, mm-hmm. exactly. Another huge source for us was the California Health Interview Survey, and we had several different renditions of that we referred to. And we also consulted various other organizations like the Ombudsman Services in San Luis Obispo, uh-huh. As well as the U.S. Department of Justice. So we went through 20 different sources, as I said, what is quoted here in the survey.
So this, as you mentioned, this is data that really was extrapolated so that these were results that were from women themselves. It wasn't commingled with what was a concern for the general population.
Exactly.
Okay.
So if we found data that was for the general population for the county of San Luis Obispo and for the state of California, we then had to take one or two more steps further and separate the data, data that reflected women as opposed to women and men together. So in a couple of instances, we had to do special crosstabs in order to do that. And in another instance, we actually requested one of the agencies to generate some special reports for us that showed just the data by women alone.
So what were some of your key findings?
Actually, a lot of interesting findings, key findings. I think some of the main ones, though, is the extent to which we're seeing chronic sadness among our teenage girls these days. Something like, if I read my notes here, more than 40% of 9th grade and 11th grade girls say they feel so sad and hopeless almost every day for at least 2 weeks that they're not able to engage in their own usual activities. That's quite a high number if you think about that.
Were you able to compare that to statewide data or other?
This we compared to, I don't believe we had statewide data. In fact, we didn't have statewide data for this. This was one of our countywide projects that have been done by another agency, but we were able to compare the data from 2009 to 2014, and we saw an increase.
Huh. And that was for the San Luis Obispo County.
Yes, yeah. Exactly. So we, as the people who put this together, don't really have answers to all of this.
No, I hear that.
I think we're really intending to raise the questions.
Sure.
To see where we go from this.
Right.
And there may be explanations about some of this. We just don't know.
Mm-hmm.
But it was a bit of a surprise to see that many young women are
self-reporting that
chronic sadness.
Chronically sad.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly.
What else were you finding?
Well, another interesting thing we found is reported in the report itself is that the rate of forcible rape is in our county is double what it is in the state of California. So that's really quite remarkable. So we found that 39 out of 100,000 population here versus 20 out of 100,000 population statewide have experienced forcible rape. Now, what we don't know, of course, is whether or not that truly reflects the incidence of rape by itself, or whether we don't perhaps in this county have a better reporting system of it, where young women or women overall feel more comfortable and are inclined to report an incidence of rape, whereas women in other counties or throughout the state may not. So I'm not quite convinced that rape is happening more often here, but certainly that it's getting reported more often.
What was the data source for that particular?
That one, I will have to dig and find it for you, Chris. Let me just find it. I believe that was the Department of Justice.
Department of Justice,
yes.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. I'll verify that as we go through this and make certain that that's what it is.
Okay. Were there other kind of things that popped out in the report?
Well, some of the other things that we saw is that, you know, even here in this place that is the happiest place on earth and is so charmed, we still see that we have major issues that need some attention, from seniors to availability of child care, availability of senior care. But when we started collecting these statistics on binge drinking, rape, safety, depression, teenage pregnancy, incidences of domestic violence, just really broad-ranging issues, safety at school, harassment, educational attainment. So we see just this broad spectrum of issues, and so we were looking to have an accurate snapshot based on these data of how are women and girls doing in this area.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. One of the things that kind of leapt out at me from the report was what you mentioned was the binge drinking. And if you can, do you want to speak to what that was? I think it was like 45.
It was. Actually, we watched this data, and between the time that we wrote the original draft of this and then the time that we were getting ready to publish it, new data came out on this, and it actually jumped, I believe, from something like 26% of women in the county in the previous year had engaged in binge drinking in the last month. It jumped up to 40% had engaged in binge drinking in the last month. So it's a pretty staggering number, and it puts San Luis Obispo County now ties for first with Marin County.
Which is amazing to me, because Marin County also is considered more of an idyllic mm-hmm. county. It tends mm-hmm. to be an affluent county.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Not that there isn't poverty within Marin County also, as there is here mm-hmm. significantly, but mm-hmm. yeah, and I think the statistic that I'm looking at in the report here showed that 46 reporting an episode of binge drinking in 2014 compared to 24% in 2007.
Yes,
which
it's
is
quite amazing.
Which is really quite a leap. And this report came from, and the data source from this.
Let me see again. I'm sorry, I don't have all of these data sources memorized. I think this is the...
It was statewide data.
It was. I believe it's the California Health Interview Survey in 2014 was the most recent one. And as I said, as we went back to verify all the data, we had data from the year before, and it had just been published, this current data showing as high as it is, 2014.
And there were several surveys that were... leading us to information on this particular topic, because also the Vital Signs survey, there had been some queries about whether or not women in San Luis Obispo County had an episode of binge drinking within the last 30 days. So we have different agencies that are asking very similar questions, but perhaps a little differently. And so that was one of the onerous tasks of this these authors, was having to wade through and to really mine this data and make those connections across the reports when things were calculated a little differently because of the way that they had answered or asked the question mm-hmm. for their particular survey.
Right, right. How long did it take, Robin, to go through these different data sources and put this together?
It really took us about a year from the time we started talking about this and then finding and deciding the methodology that we were going to use.
Right.
And I would say probably by the time we settled on the idea that we weren't going to do our own data collection, that we really had this wealth of information at our fingertips, it probably took us 9 months from the time we made that decision that, oh my gosh, look at what we have here. Let's move this direction, to the completion of the report. So as Suzanne said, we spent not just time collecting it and finding it, but also verifying it, double checking to make sure that the sample size of the agency or whatever the source was large enough to be reasonably
considered significant, yeah,
and not something that might vary tremendously because 10 people were interviewed this particular time as opposed to 12 people in the previous year. So we really were very careful about what we chose and what we selected and what we ended up reporting. If it didn't make sense to us, or I should say if it wasn't something that we could really verify, we did find some other things that we thought were interesting. For instance, the number of women in the county of San Luis who are raising their grandchildren. We couldn't really clarify that, and we couldn't verify it, and we couldn't find any sources that had enough of a sample size to make mm-hmm. us feel comfortable. We chose not to include mm-hmm. that kind of information.
Now, you do this professionally. I mean, this really is your business in terms of mm-hmm. Developing surveys, right. administering surveys, and then right. also interpreting the data from surveys. Yeah. With what you have here, you're really making it clear this is the first step. I mean, just having this information doesn't say this is the end point. This yeah. really is a beginning point.
Oh, absolutely. I think both Suzanne and I certainly agree on this, and the community and the Women's Legacy Fund Committee believes this is the first step. So it really, you know, whether this is something the Women's Legacy Fund will continue to do over the next couple of years or every 5 years, we haven't gotten to that place yet. But yes, indeed, this effort was just, let's collect this, let's see where we go, let's see what we find out, and then what kind of a dialogue can we have with nonprofits and other decision makers in the county that will determine what comes out of all of this.
If you just joined us on Central Coast Voices here on KCBX Radio, my guests are Suzanne Parker, Governmental Relations Manager at Pacific Gas and Electric Company, PG&E, and committee member for Women's Legacy Fund, and Robin Letters, owner of Opinion Studies and San Luis Obispo-based research company, and one of the three authors of the recently released Women's Legacy Fund report, What Do Women Need? Issues Impacting Women and Girls in San Luis Obispo County, 2015. While many magazines and articles have referred to San Luis Obispo County as offering idyllic quality of life and as a happy place, the recent study results, that's a compilation of studies that have been done in other organizations or from other data sources, indicated there are also coexisting issues for girls and women living in the community that need to be talked about and looked at further. We welcome you into our discussion today and would love to hear your comments and questions. You can join us by calling us at 781-3875. Again, if you have questions or comments about today's topic, it's 781-3875. Robin or Suzanne, what are some common misperceptions, do you think, that you began to see? Were there any that kind of surfaced as you were looking at some of the data that you were seeing that kind of popped out for you?
Well, I think that some of the surprises, answering your question, talking about some of the surprises, was, for instance, in our Latina population, how much our Latinas are not getting the benefit of a decent education. In other words, we found as we dug down into some of the data that Latinas are 32%, or almost a third of our Latina population, are not even graduating from high school, which is such a fundamental part of being empowered and being able to develop one's own economic independence, that this was a really difficult place for such an important part of our community to not have that benefit.
So that wait a minute. So say that again.
One third of the Latinas who live in San Luis Obispo County have not graduated from high school.
That's astounding.
Compared to, I believe, 10% of all women and 7% of non-Latinas. So yes, one third. I mean, that sets a young woman up for a very challenging life, not to have the skills that she needs to have in order to develop economic independence for herself and for her family, too.
Right, right. And also the opportunity for further education, or even for minimum wage jobs, competing for
exactly
just entry-level jobs.
Exactly, exactly. Mm-hmm. And one other interesting point for our Latina population is the teenagers who are Latinas represent 26% of our women population. However, teen pregnancies among that population is 58%. So 58% of all teen pregnancies occur among Latinas, Latina teens. Mm-hmm. So lack of education and early birth, early childhood, early parenthood are two big stumbling blocks for an important part of our population.
And what we don't know, what you can't see from the data, is which is the chicken, which is the
egg. Exactly. You know,
is the dropout rate due to the pregnancy, or, you know, does it have a relationship to the dropout?
Exactly. And then the third component of all of this, and in our report also talks about this, and I don't have those numbers exactly at my fingertips, but is the incidence of poverty among our Latinas, and their median household income is considerably lower than Hispanic Latinos and non-Latina women, and of course non-Latina men. So they are at the bottom rung of the income ladder.
Yeah. The report, too, also addressed a huge concern, and I've had this on my show before, for child care.
Yes.
And that crosses all economic.
Yes. What we've found, and it is so interesting, and I'm so glad you're bringing it up, Chris, because I do think it's an issue for our Cal Poly professors, as well as
everybody in this community.
Every woman who has a child and wants to or needs to be employed must find a way to be able to care for that child. What our data showed was there are, for all the children who have working parents, there are only enough child care spots for one-third of all of those children. Those are licensed child care spots. There's only 36% of those children. There are enough spots for those children to be in a licensed child care center. So that's pretty low.
Oh, my gosh. Yeah.
So it's a challenge. And I did some work several years ago for Cal Poly, and it was probably that, and it really had to do with women professors at Cal Poly in the STEM fields. And the whole question of the survey was, or the research was, to find out how to retain women professors in the STEM field. And that was the top issue, was child care. Mm-hmm. If you're a mom and you're working, how do you care for your children?
Well, and if you put that together with what is just happening to us as a society, and you look at how it is in this community in terms of family units, extended family, it is uncommon for extended families or multi-generations to live within the community, especially yes. during the time where you've got younger families who may have middle-aged parents that are here. Those are the ones that tend to be most dissected. They're living elsewhere, you know, because they're pursuing their careers.
Right.
So the ability to call on your own family to support you when child care resources aren't available just isn't here.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly. Big challenge. The other interesting thing, and this was somewhat personally interesting to me, is here in San Luis Obispo, we know we as women tend to make less money than we would perhaps
nationally.
Certainly nationally, yeah. And even statewide, we make less money here. But what was interesting in our data was more women in San Luis Obispo County are employed than are employed statewide. More of us are employed part-time here in this county than full-time, compared statewide. And my question I think I ask is, do we tend to be employed more often part-time because we want to be, or because that's what's available to us?
Right.
So, and again, we don't have the answers to those questions. We just had the questions.
Exactly. And I think that's what this data is driving. Or does it tie back to what we were just talking about, which is childcare? Is it because that's the only way we can work out schedules in order to maintain some kind of employment
exactly.
and maintain childcare,
exactly.
you know, and access to childcare? So you're right. The report tends to generate a whole lot of questions. What about for senior women?
Well, I think we see this around the community is that like we have the limited access to childcare, there are limited spaces available for seniors who want to go to an assisted living facility.
Right.
And so the licensed facilities that are available, I mean, there's a very high demand on those. And we have an older population in San Luis Obispo. I mean, it's a significant demographic here, and we're going to be continuing to see some challenges meeting the needs of seniors in this community.
Well, we are older in this community compared to the state.
Yes,
the state average right mm-hmm. now, mm-hmm. But as a nation, we're going to see certainly two things with the baby boomers. We have more baby boomers who are going to be turning in their 70s and hitting 75. And we have more women that are going to be surviving than men. That's just right. A natural phenomena right now. And
Be prepared.
Yeah, there's not. I mean, you read these, you read articles all the time about people trying to find care who can't live independently, but where do they go? Their families aren't here. We don't have communities that can support us living independently in our own homes. What are we going to do?
Right.
And we don't have enough younger people to provide care for the older people anymore.
Right.
It's really hitting a crisis.
Yeah. And what we quote in our report is 27%, so one-fourth of all the women over the age of 75 need assistance. So, and as that age gets higher, of course,
they
the
need
frequency and the incidence gets higher.
Right.
Yes. So, but one in four at the age of 75 needs help, needs assistance, can't live alone or completely independently.
So elder care and child care.
Mm-hmm. The two ends of the age spectrum. Yeah. And you know, I saw a statistic recently that was saying that octogenarians and nonagenarians, so people in their 80s and 90s, are the most rapidly growing mm-hmm. population demographic in the U.S. And, I mean, it speaks wonders for our healthcare system, but it presents communities with very real challenges.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
And as attractive as we are to people as they retire, that segment of our population is just going to get larger, mm-hmm. proportionally more than perhaps some other counties and some other areas.
And I will, you know, and I will say right now that people in their 80s and 90s do not want to provide child care. So that's not the answer to the both ends of the spectrum, if anybody's thinking that is a solution. You are listening to Central Coast Voices on KCBX Public Radio 90.1 San Luis Obispo, 91.7 Salinas de Paso Robles, 95.1 Lompoc, 90.9 Santa Ynez, 89.9 Santa Barbara, and worldwide on the web at kcbx.org. If you just joined us, my guests are Suzanne Parker, the Government Relations Manager at PG&E, and a committee member for the Women's Legacy Fund, and Robin Letters, owner of Opinion Studies, a San Luis Obispo-based research company, and also one of the three authors of the recently released Women's Legacy Fund report, What Do Women Need? Issues Impacting Women and Girls in San Luis Obispo County in 2015. This is a great time to call in and ask questions of Suzanne or Robin, or make a comment about our topic today. You can reach us at 781-3875 and join our conversation.
Now, I thought this might be a good opportunity to let listeners know where they can find a copy of the report.
Yeah, that's a great idea.
We have,
it's an interesting report.
And you can download a PDF, yeah, or you could use the page-turner version that we have on the Community Foundation website. People can look at it at WLFSLO.org, so WLFSLO.org, and there's a link on the right-hand side of the page that says Statistics and Reports.
So, okay. So if they also don't remember all that, can they Google Women's Legacy Fund report?
They can.
San Luis
and
Obispo.
It should get them there.
It'll get you there. So
I just encourage everyone to look down. It's down towards the bottom of the original homepage.
Yeah, there's
a link to
it.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And we have a question or comment from Carolyn. Carolyn, are you there?
Yes, I am.
Hi. Did you have a comment, question?
Well, I do. I do. Just for the fact that, I mean, there was probably several things, and I heard her talking about some of the statistics regarding the Latino girls and pregnancy, you know, out of wedlock, that type of thing, and also the higher statistics. But there's also, you know I grew up in this county, and I was, I'm not of Latino heritage. I'm Italian Portuguese heritage, and so there's a lot of variation there. I know of that, and but I know in the past that there was opportunities where they had, like, there were certain schools, Pacific Beach and other schools, and I don't know how they delved into this, but you were able to go to school and bring your child to school while you were getting an education,
right?
And also, there was also, like, when, and also in the community, you know, there's also, you can get your GED, that program, and then also the community colleges offer child care, and I was under the understanding that some of those, like Cuesta College, were going according to a rate of what you could afford, not what they expected you to pay out, you know, to help you along with your education while, if you're single, trying to raise your own child. You know, there's a lot of different programs. There was, like, the WIN community program. I don't know if you're aware of that. I don't know if they still offer it. And it was a training program where you get the on-the-job training also, and they would, the company would pay for part of it, and the government would pay for part of it.
Mm-hmm.
So, like, what opportunities for is it for those types of people in the community that would need that now that were offered then? I saw that 10, 15, 20 years ago.
I think you're bringing up great information, Carolyn. And what, right, I'm going to go back to Suzanne and Robin on is that what they're talking about right now is just the data that came forward. You talk, Robin, about what happens next with this data? Because There are some programs, there are some, right, solutions that people may not know about, but
exactly,
what happens
exactly
next, yeah, right? That's what you're asking, Carolyn.
I think
exactly.
Okay.
So that there's girls, and also it's not just females that have gone through it that have children out of wedlock, but there's also males sometimes raising children that need to get that training or that, you know, education and need the, mm-hmm, assistance. And I know of I had to find, mm-hmm, child care, and the society EOC offered, you know, a listing of all that, mm-hmm, too, what was available out there. And sometimes if you were under a certain income level,
right,
you know, you had the government agency would help you in paying for part of that.
Yeah, and so, just to be clear too, Carolyn, what we've talked about so far, and you're bringing up a real good point about where we're going in the second half of the show, but the what they've talked about so far is just what the data has brought forward as questions. The next step is really to look at, okay, what are the resources and the solutions? And if people don't know about them, what do we as a community need to do to connect people to those things? So you bring up a great point, and thanks for calling and bringing that up.
We don't have children, but are trying to go to, and I had to do this on my own, try to go to, you want to go to, you know, a junior college, and they need that tutoring.
Well, so can you address Carolyn's
I am thrilled to hear that she found so many programs out there that were supporting her intention and desire to further her education as well as to take advantage of child care assistance out there. I think that's fabulous. And the more we can do as a community to be able to support, whether it's Latinas or non-Latinas, anyone in these situations is certainly what the task or what the goal would be. I think our objective, and Suzanne can speak to this even more than I can probably, is our hope is to have more dialogue with organizations and programs and be able to point out the importance of some of these things and the reality. Now, just to also say the our data that indicates a third of all Latinas have not graduated from high school, that, of course, reflects all Latinas from age 25 to age 102. So hopefully, if we were to do a measurement of Latinas, say, under the age of 35, we would see that the incidence of education is getting more prominent and occurring more often than in Latinas overall as a whole population.
Yeah.
And just to go back to some of the issues that Carolyn highlighted with her call, I'm just so grateful that we're able to have this discussion, because really our intent behind this was just to increase public awareness of the needs of girls and women in this county and in this area. And we want to be able to have informed, educated discussions with our community leaders and with the nonprofit organizations that help serve these needs about the current status of what we are facing here. And it will in turn help affect the decisions that we as the Women's Legacy Fund are able to make as a committee on the grants that we're able to provide to nonprofits in the area. This helps inform our decisions moving forward.
You mentioned before we came on the air and in some of the material that you provided me, something that we've talked about in shows that I've done before, that there are over 1,200 registered nonprofits here in San Luis Obispo County. That's a huge number of nonprofits, and which is great, because that means there are a lot of nonprofits that are providing services. But in a lot of situations, there's overlap of them. And in some situations, you can have a lot of agencies, but you can still have cracks in the system where people are still dropping in between those cracks, and they're not receiving the services or don't know about the services.
That's right.
And so part of what I'm hearing too, and I heard from Carolyn, is that people can only access what they know about. And the idea that we have services and build it and they will come is a ridiculous concept.
Right.
Yeah, we just can't do that.
Right.
And that everybody, not everybody can read, not everybody can understand, not everybody has a car, not everybody, we really need to address the entire community.
Right. I think one of our concerns also, the notion that 1,200 nonprofits exist in our county is a great comment about the charitability, the giving quality, and the
volunteerism.
Yes, I mean it's tremendous here. I think our concern is perhaps the redundancy of some of these services, and as you say, Chris, that some people perhaps are dropping through the crack, and those needs aren't getting met. So that was one of our goals as we set out to do this, was, are there some needs that aren't being met that should be met or could be met? That's where the next step comes, where conversations with nonprofits can occur and other decision makers, and help us figure out what are some of those things that aren't happening and aren't getting addressed that could be addressed.
Yeah. Yeah, there are a lot of, I think, having worked in the nonprofit world as long as I have, there are some things that are more attractive to people to support and be a part of. And there are some stark realities of living here in the county that are harsher and harder for us to look at and support. And those, unfortunately, are the things that are the most necessary to support, and they're the hardest to get funding for. So, absolutely. We're going to take a phone call here from Glenda. Glenda, are you there?
Yes, I'm here.
Hi. Did you have a comment or a question?
Yes, I do. Let me unmute this. Well, actually, I'm going to start with a comment.
Okay.
And I know you already talk about the Latina teen pregnancies, and I know, like, you mentioned that for every 100 teen pregnancies, 56 of them are Latinas, and I know this is a shocking statistic that demonstrates that we have a serious problem in our community.
For teen pregnancies?
For teen pregnancies. Mm-hmm. But I also believe that this problem cannot be appropriately addressed unless we dig deeper in order to understand the underlying factors and causes. So I think some of the questions that we might want to ask to delve further into this issue include, what's the role that cultural values play within the Latino community?
Mm-hmm.
What is the family composition?
Mm-hmm.
Is sex education and access to contraception a taboo for open discussion among this population?
Yes.
What is the socioeconomic background of these Latina teens? And do they have a strong female role models within the within their families?
Right. Right.
Also, when we talk about the dropout rate among Latinas and knowing that it is nearly 4.5 times higher than the percentage of our non-Latinas, this is another issue. I believe that education is the key for Latinas to make a better life for themselves. And I recently heard the phrase, education is a universal civil right that ensures social mobility. So I completely believe that earning a college education will ensure Latinas better job opportunities that in turn will help them improve their quality of life and break their cycles of poverty. However, as a counselor, I'm also aware that for many Latinas, there are barriers that they face that sometimes are very difficult to overcome.
Mm-hmm.
And some of these barriers, you know, like just to give you some examples, for some Latinas that I work with, they feel a great sense of guilt for taking personal time for pursuing their education or for missing important family gatherings.
Mm-hmm.
Others feel great sense of responsibility to contribute to their households, so they take 2 or 3 jobs while they are trying to go to school.
Yeah.
And in many other cases, students don't feel encouraged to go to school by their families.
Mm-hmm.
And it is even more discouraging when you hear about a student whose mothers or grandmothers don't approve of them going to college.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
So I believe like the dissemination of this data across the county is very critical. And I have already shared the results with the Latina Leadership Network at Cuesta College.
So if there will be
If there will be an opportunity for us to either come to the show or meet with the committee to discuss further, I feel like, you know, we have some ideas on how we can address some of the issues in the study.
Fantastic.
That sounds like a wonderful suggestion. You bring up a lot of really very valid and salient points. And so I thank you very much for calling in.
No problem. And lastly, you know, I do want to commend the Women's Legacy Fund for making this study available and for making the community aware of the issues affecting women and teens in our county. And I do have a follow-up question for you. And one would be, I know you talk about this is the first step and this being the beginning point. So do you have plans for any further follow-up research to understand some of the issues that came out of this study so that they can be explored even more extensively?
Yes, we do. This is the first step. And our next step is to meet with nonprofit leaders early next year to discuss the results of the report and learn what they found useful out of it and how they intend to use this information to address the problems facing women and girls in this area. Because I think we all can agree that if girls are more educated, healthy, and independent, then that's going to help us address some of these alarming statistics just from the ground up.
Mm-hmm.
And so I definitely see this as just the beginning of, or maybe actually a midway point, because I don't want to discount the work that had been done 5 years ago. This, you know, this was the second effort related to collecting data on what is the status of women and girls in this county. And so this is just sort of the next milepost. And I think that we just need to continue these conversations so that we can have a really healthy community. If we are able to tackle some of these issues, I mean, it's just going to make our women and our girls stronger and smarter and more self-assured.
Yeah. Yeah, if I can just make a comment about that, Glenda, also I add my thanks to Suzanne and Chris's for your call-in today and your comments. You have some very enlightening things to say about all of this. I think I can probably stick my neck out here and say that the Women's Legacy Fund is very committed to the idea of continuing to collect reliable data on the status of women in the county. Now, whether that means another research project of some sort will be done next year, probably not likely, but something 5 years from now that builds on what has been done in the last two reports, I will be very surprised that that doesn't happen.
And I think, Glenda, you know, that the kind of input that you just gave on the air about what you know from working with the Latina community, from your own experience, is exactly the kind of next step information that the Women's Legacy Fund needs and is trying to facilitate in the conversation, because the data is only data. It's information that asks people to look at what does this make any sense, and based on your experience, what does it say? You're the ones that come back with the information that says it does or doesn't make sense based on this. And from what you're saying, then it's up to nonprofit organizations to say, okay, now that makes sense. How do we better address that?
Definitely.
If we know that those are issues, what programs, what services, what support systems do we have around Latina girls to support them and also to support their mothers and grandmothers in understanding the value for the family to have the education? And how do we make that something that is viable? And rather than ignoring it or trying to get them to approach education in ways that don't work within the family system.
Exactly. And I think with your previous caller, you know, asking for resources, what's available. I mean, I know I don't have enough time to explain all of it, but I work at Cuesta. And here at Cuesta, we have several programs that we will be more than happy to educate the public in terms of what's available for this population. Look, I don't know if people are aware that we have free GED courses at the North County campus at Cuesta College. We also have the Promise Scholarship. I mean, there are many resources that we have to support students. Sometimes they are not aware that that's available.
I would love to have you come back on the show. And one of the things that I would love to have you do is to send in your information to voices@kcbx.com. And also, Jordan is going to pick up the phone and get your information for me so that we can bring you back on as a guest, because I think that would be wonderful.
Oh, perfect.
Okay.
Thank you, Chris.
Thank you, Glenda.
You're very welcome.
Okay. That was great. I think that's exactly what you want to do as the next step for all those Glendas that are available, regardless of what the agencies are, to really look at, boy, okay, so, you know, we had a caller who called in and said that she was concerned, or she or he was concerned about the binge drinking statistic, as she felt it implied it's alarming that San Luis Obispo County is such a place. She's afraid it's being tied to a socioeconomic class. Poorer people drink more. And I don't know that relationship was ever made in the statistic at all. But she wanted to remind listeners that a lot of events on the Central Coast revolve around drinking for the wealthy and et cetera. And we do, you know, I mean, this is wine country. We have a lot of breweries. I know that a lot of nonprofits, you know, use alcohol-related events as fundraising events. So, you know, that's something to look at as well.
Right. I I suppose my thought here is this: we certainly did not tie this to a socioeconomic level. And my sort of personal walk away with this is, yes, we live in a culture in a county where wine and alcohol is at the mm-hmm. center of our economics in some ways. Mm-hmm. And, yes, all of our social events include wine tasting or wine sipping or something. So it is very much a part of our environment and mm-hmm. the way we do things here.
In fact, I think the only tie to socioeconomic was the connection to we kind of tied with Marin County, which is actually an affluent county.
Yes. The other counties, I think, were Napa and Sonoma, perhaps. We're probably way up there, too. I'll have to go double check.
Which are also wine counties.
Which makes
counties.
Sense. I mean, yeah. it has a similar kind of environment. Mm-hmm. And before we get off the air, I'll make sure I'm saying that correctly because it's down here. So, yeah.
So what... For the issues that now have been identified, next year, then, are you going to have an invitation to the nonprofits to come forward? Are there, have you sent this report out to nonprofits and asked them to review it? What steps are next?
Now that we have published the report and it is available online, we have been publicizing it with area nonprofits and as well with our county level decision makers. So okay. we've made sure that our elected officials are aware of this. And so we've been reaching out to different stakeholders to make sure that they understand that this information is available.
What about county schools, superintendent of schools?
As well, yes.
Yeah,
making sure that people who engage with some of these populations, particularly for some of the population, the demographics that we've called out, for Latinas or for senior women and related to childcare, we're making sure that the people who are providing those services have access to this data and that they're part of the conversation moving forward. So in the first quarter of next year, we will be having some listening sessions with the area nonprofits to talk with them about how can they use these data to inform what they do? And how should we, as the Women's Legacy Fund, be responsive to their needs? How is it going to affect our grant making and the programs that we choose to invest in? So I think the next part of the conversation will involve much more listening than talking.
What kind of granting has the Legacy Fund done up until now?
So over the years of the Women's Legacy Fund, over the past 13 years, we've granted more than $230,000 to local organizations that serve all areas of need for women and girls. And we celebrate those at our annual luncheon that we have each September. As we have built our endowment, we've just hit the $1 million mark for our endowment at the Community Foundation. And so we see that we are able to give larger and larger grants, and we're able to give more and more as we build that endowment because we like to spread awareness that when you are making investments in community funds at a community foundation, when you are contributing toward an endowment, you're not just making a one-time gift because of the way that compound interest works. Your gift gets to grow. And so rather than just taking your $100 donation or your $1,000 donation to an organization, you're able to put it into a fund that will grow and mature and can become all kinds of new possibilities. So
have the majority of the funds been in terms of grants to individuals, or have they been grants to programs, and have the programs been around education, organizations?
We have been giving topically. So like in the last year, our major area of focus was on mental health.
Okay.
So just in the last year, we were giving to organizations that were focused on mental health. And you can see the complete roster of all of our grant recipients on our website. That's wlfslow.org. So you can see the breadth of all the organizations that we've given to, because we're really trying to make a big impact. All the studies show that investing in women and girls, it increases economic development opportunities, education, health, and other effects, not just for the women themselves, but for their families and for the community. So we're really trying to make lasting gifts that can have a spread. I mean, it's, you hear comparisons about the ripples in a pond, where you look for, where are you able to make an impact, and where is it going to be able to grow and spread and create change larger than just right at the area where you've given.
So. We have about 3 minutes. What would you like to make sure that we put out there with this show before we go off? What do you want people to hear?
Well, first I want to correct something that I said when we were talking about binge drinking.
I'm sorry. Once you say it, it's out there. You can't
I
take
know.
It back.
That's my
Go
fear.
Ahead, Robin.
See if I can curl it back in. Anyway, I did misstate. So the two counties that tie for the highest incidence of binge drinking is, in fact, San Luis Obispo and Marin County. The next two are not Napa and Sonoma, which intuitively you might think would be, but it is actually Santa Cruz County ranks number third, ranks three, and Santa Barbara County ranks number four.
Hmm.
But still, counties somewhat similar to right. San Luis Obispo. So, I thank you, Chris, for letting me correct that and get that.
Well, okay. Okay. Is there anything else besides correcting your faux pas that you want?
I would just
there?
Like to applaud the Women's Legacy Fund for their continuing interest in working on behalf of women and girls in this county. It is a fabulous mission that they've taken on, and they are doing a tremendous job keeping us all on our toes and keeping us focused on making lives better for everybody in this county.
Now, if people want to get involved with the Next Steps, organizations want to get involved, they wait for you guys to get in touch with them, or should they call the Community Foundation, the Women's Legacy Fund? How would they make sure that they're kind of on the ticket for this?
Communication should always be a two-way street. So rather than waiting for us to reach out, I hope that they will also call our office at the Community Foundation. That's area code 805-543-2323. And let us know, because we want to have a really robust and healthy dialogue. Because again, if we have girls and women who are more educated, healthy, and independent, we can address some of these statistics right now.
Great. And I want to thank my guests today, Suzanne Parker, Governmental Relations Manager for PG&E and Committee Member for Women's Legacy Fund, Robin Letters, also, who's the owner of Opinion Studies, a San Luis Obispo-based research company, and everyone who called in with their comments and questions today. Thank you for lending your time to this show. It made it vastly improved. And Central Coast Voices is sponsored by Action for Healthy Communities and the San Luis Obispo Community Foundation in collaboration with KCBX, and made possible through underwriting by Joan Geller Sargent. Your suggestions for future show topics is always welcome. Please send them to voices@kcbx.org. Next week on Central Coast Voices, host Fred Monroe will speak with representatives from Wilshire Health and Community Services. Kelly Donahue, their marketing and outreach coordinator, and Stephanie Medina, their director of corporate and community relations, will discuss how creative mediation can help move people from conflict to resolution. I am Chris Kington Barker, and I want to thank you for joining me on the Central Coast Voices this afternoon.